better.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Okay, we had Gary David with a lengthy description. Would you kind of bring our listeners to the next stage?
Sure, yeah. I was talking about these two lines, symbolic lines, two different paths. The lower path is the traditional way of the Hopi, carved into this rock. The Hopi tend corn and live close to the earth. They're humble people. And then the upper line, which is parallel to it, going off towards the right, has a number of figures in it, located. This line ends in a zigzag. It just stops, and the zigzag goes up, and then it just stops, like it stops in midair. And this is the way that the fourth world will end if we keep on this path. Now the lower line continues around the side of the rock, and it's interesting that Grandfather Martin talks about this. This line continuing along the side of the rock. It doesn't stop like the upper line. And he said sometimes he can go to Prophecy Rock, and this line that continues along the side of the rock is not there anymore. And then I'll go back the next day, and it is there.
So Prophecy Rock is undergoing constant change?
Well, Grandfather Martin is a caretaker of this, and I've seen him re-incise some of the lines on there. Okay.
Now, when you say that, are you saying the rock is almost fluid, that it's not a constant set of pictures, but it changes from day to day?
That's what Grandfather Martin claims, that, you know, this line, he calls it the line of everlasting life. And sometimes he'll go there and the line has kind of faded away. Other times he'll go there and the line is back there. So it's kind of a mystical occurrence. If indeed if this is happening, it's kind of a mystery that these lines would appear and disappear and then reappear again.
Yeah, both times I've been there, you can faintly make it out, but I could see with lighting conditions up there being the way they are that if the light isn't right, that line is very faint. So
sure, yeah, that's true with any petroglyphs. I mean, if you've gone petroglyph hunting in the Southwest, you know that you can walk by a whole panel of petroglyphs, and if the light is not right, you know, you just won't see them. So, you know, this is what might be taking place. I'm not sure. But it also might signal the tentativeness of this everlasting lifeline that he claims that will bring us into the fifth world. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, he said this is everlasting life. And I took a compass and stood with my back to the plane where this line goes across the side of the rock. And I took a reading with my back to this line, looking out towards the eastern horizon. It's the place where the summer solstice sunrise is, exactly 60 degrees azimuth.
Now, let me ask you a question here. Is it possible that we're seeing these differences, or they're reporting this because of the way the sun reflects upon this rock?
Yeah, I think that might be one explanation. That's a logical explanation. That is, you know, what you would say. That would be the logical way to do it. Because, like I say, petroglyphs, rock carvings can disappear, you know, according to the way the light is, and you're walking around and you'll miss something and you'll walk by the same place a little later on and it's back there. That's plausible, yeah.
Are there photographs of this rock showing changes or differences that we could point to? Because the skeptics are going to ask for that. They'll say, all right, so someone says that this image is here today, it's gone tomorrow, maybe it's reflections, but can you show us what it looks like?
Yeah, well, I have some pictures of it myself, but I've seen previous drawings, like Frank Waters' book has a drawing of Prophecy Rock, and I tried to compare it with what I saw, and there is a, for instance, a swastika on the rock, and also an iron cross or a Maltese cross on the rock in Frank Waters' drawing. But I did not see these. I did not see these at all.
This is a drawing. It's not a photo.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so a drawing can contain anything.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah,
but yeah, and there are plenty of photos of Prophecy Rock. It's probably the most famous Hopi petroglyph, actually.
Right.
And it's also, much to my surprise, I found out it's a fairly recent petroglyph. It's, I think, early 20th century or possibly late 19th century. What do we know about the history of that particular carving?
I think you're right, Chris, because, you know, I've looked at a lot of petroglyphs in the Southwest, and this looks fairly recent. As far as a patination, patination is where a desert patina kind of darkens certain rocks, and when you carve into the rock, it's lighter underneath. There's a lighter surface is revealed, but this one looks doesn't look like it has much patina on it. I would agree. It's probably early 20th century. I saw right behind Prophecy Rock, I saw what looked like much older petroglyphs of clouds and a figure. So,
now, how far can we date these shrines or petroglyphs or whatever?
Well, it's very hard to date petroglyphs, Gene, because you know, there's no carbon dating or carbon. You can you more or less have to look at the repatination of the petroglyph. That means the desert varnish, it's also called, that rocks get after they're weathered. You know, you carve into the rock and you can see the undersurface and it's lighter. And then if that's re-varnished, so to speak, by natural processes, then it will be a very much older petroglyph, and it will be more eroded. So basically, you can only tell by the way it's been eroded and the amount of patination is on the rock surface.
Is there any indication here that possibly some of this stuff, some of these things you see, were not drawn by Hopis, but by some other beings, other races, higher beings, whatever?
I don't believe so. I think these are Hopi carvings. The one thing the strange thing I see with Prophecy Rock is the petroglyph that's adjacent to it is very interesting. It's a disc shaped object, and it looks rather mechanical. And it's right next to Prophecy Rock, and it looks like a flying saucer, basically.
And it's much older too, by the way. That particular carving.
Yeah, I think it's more weathered than Prophecy Rock, but it's hard to say because, like I said, I saw Grandfather Martin recarve some of the lines in Prophecy Rock when we were standing there. So he constantly works on Prophecy Rock, whereas I don't believe he does this other flying saucer petroglyph. But Grandfather Martin tried to explain this disc-shaped petroglyph in that he said it was a device or machine or mechanism so that people could talk to each other all over the world. Now, that was his explanation of this particular disc-shaped or saucer-shaped petroglyph.
So this was basically a communicator?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, and you can do that with a cell phone, of course, or an iPhone or something like that.
Well, yeah, but it's shaped very much like a flying saucer. I got the idea of it might be a satellite or something of some sort.
Well, that could be a possibility, or maybe they made it that way so Apple wouldn't sue them for patent infringement, because, you know, Apple sues if the rectangle is the wrong shape or something like that. So rectangles and straight lines, Apple will sue you. You can't have Apple suing you. I'm making light of something that's very serious, because this is part of something we've seen around the world, these strange objects that look like spaceships, flying ships, whatever. With Gene and Chris, we have Gary David, You're in
the Paracast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Attack! Of the Rockoids. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockoids, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition.
Gold is like nothing else on Earth. From the Romans through the Renaissance, from the Industrial Age to the Space Age, gold has weathered the test of time. For 6,000 years, gold has remained the ultimate store of wealth. According to the World Gold Council and the U.S. Mint, demand is at an all-time high. The stage is being set for the reemergence of gold as the common-sense alternative to a fiat paper currency that gets weaker every day. Midas Resources is proud to offer the hard-hitting report that arms you with the truth you need to protect you and your family from the Fed's plans for your hard-earned money. Don't gamble with your future. Call Midas Resources today and ask for your free copy of As Good as Gold. Call 1-800-686-2237 for the report the Fed hopes you'll never see. As Good as Gold can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. If you have ever thought about owning gold, you must read this report. Call Midas today at 800-686-2237.
For all women and men who wish their fingernails were harder, this Christmas, wishes come true. Introducing Nails of Steel, a new revolutionary nail hardener. Nails of Steel puts muscle into your soft nails with a creamy, rich, natural herbal formula that is antifungal, hypoallergenic, and biodegradable. Just massage a drop of Nails of Steel over your natural or polished nails and go. With Nails of Steel, there's virtually no drying time. Within the first week, you'll notice your nails getting stronger to eliminate breaking, chipping, splitting, hanging nails, and fungus. Nails of Steel makes a great stocking stuffer for women or men. And right now, get 3 1-ounce bottles for only $74.95. That's about a $5 price break on each bottle that'll last you for months. Visit nailsofsteel.com. That's nailsofsteel.com. Nails of Steel. It's like a salon in a bottle.
You know what happens to your digestive health around the holidays? Right. Unusual schedules and foods you don't normally eat can cause upset stomach and indigestion. But you can prepare your digestive tract with Pro-EM-1 Probiotic Cleanse from Terraganics.com. Pro-EM-1 is all natural and made with certified organic ingredients. It contains no genetically modified ingredients or preservatives and has no animal products, wheat, soy, dairy, or gluten. Pro-EM-1 does not require refrigeration, so you can take it with you, over the river and through the woods to Grandma's house. Pro-EM-1 supports a healthy, regular digestive system, supports weight loss, and improves absorption of food nutrients. Improve your digestion and keep off those extra pounds with Pro-EM-1 Probiotic Cleanse. Call or click Terraganics.com, spelled TerraGanix.com. Toll free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Terraganics, life's getting better.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
With Gene and Chris, you're in the Paracast, and we have Gary David exploring all sorts of legends of indigenous peoples, the Hopi legends, the petroglyphs, the prophecy rock, little objects that look suspiciously like, aircraft. How much of that stuff, who knows? Chris, let's just pick up on this and let's move the discussion away from the Hopis to other legends.
Okay, well, you know, when you're talking about star shrines and earthworks of the desert southwest, it's kind of hard not to talk about the Hopi because they're pretty much responsible for the vast majority, I think, of these just wonderful sites and locations. Of course, in Gary's first book, The Orion Zone, he stumbled on a correlation that is still fascinating to me. And he does address this somewhat in his latest work as well. But there is a correlation between the constellations and how the array of villages and sacred sites are aligned on the planet in the southwest. And there seems to be a direct correlation with the constellations based around the three belt stars of Orion, which in Gary's interpretation seems to indicate the first, second, and third mesa of the Hopi being the belt star of Orion. Why don't you just quickly give our new listeners a thumbnail sketch of your archaeoastronomy work as it relates to ancient paleo sites here in the desert southwest.
Sure, Chris. This happened about 15 years ago that I stumbled across this idea. I had just finished reading a book by Robert Bouval and Adrian Gilbert called The Orion Mystery. And, of course, they believe that three major pyramids on the Giza Plateau reflect the belt stars of Orion exactly. And there's a direct sky-ground correlation between these belt stars that most people can recognize in the heavens and these three pyramids on the Giza Plateau. And I was driving up to the Hopi Mesas in the summer of 1997, and I was driving up from the south off the Interstate 40, and gazing up at these three primary mesas where the Hopi settled about 1050, 1100 AD, and started building pueblos, villages on the mesas and at the base of the mesas. And I was gazing up at this Hopi center of the world. They like to think of these mesas as the center of the cosmos or the center of the world. And I thought, well, you know, these three mesas up here, maybe there's an Orion correlation right here in Arizona. So, you know, I kind of put that in the back of my mind and went up and watched the Kachina dances in the village plaza. And then I got back home and I got out a sky chart and got out a map of Arizona and compared the two. And I realized that not only were the belt stars corresponding to the three major mesas, but there was a ruined site or village corresponding to each major star in the constellation Orion. And the correlation was just uncanny. It was just almost exact. And other villages, ancient villages, also played into it. Over in New Mexico, Chaco Canyon corresponded to the star Sirius. Chaco Canyon, of course, is the one of the largest ruined sites in the southwest, and it corresponded to the brightest star in the sky. This got me really thinking about this sky-ground, as-above-so-below phenomenon that many ancient cultures, including the Egyptians, apparently constructed their temples and their monuments according to the stars in the heavens. So it started me on this journey almost of going out to each one of these sites and photographing the sites and writing a little bit about each particular site that corresponded to a star in the constellation Orion.
Well, Gary, you've done quite a bit of work since the 1997 looking into these correlations. One of the things that I find fascinating about your work as well is the little project that you undertook a couple of years ago, looking at the area around Grand Canyon and the confluence of the Little Colorado River and the Colorado River. And we did have J.C. Johnson on a few months back, and we did talk about the trip that we took last May out to Grand Canyon and to the confluence rim. But there's been a lot of developments in that story since we talked about it. Why don't we give our new listeners a quick thumbnail sketch of what you were able to ascertain from Google Earth one day when you were checking out and doing a flyover of the area.
I'll tell you how I came across this thing that developed into the Grand Canyon Expedition in May of 2012, this year. I was looking on Google Earth, and I happened to see an odd-looking rectangle. And you could tell that this rectangle was made by tire tracks, okay? There are a lot of roads in this area where the Little Colorado River flows into the main part of the Colorado River in the Grand Canyon. Right next to this one area where this confluence, as it's called, is this huge rectangle, like a mile long and three-quarters of a mile wide. And it's a perfect rectangle that's flanking the cliff right by the Colorado River. I thought, well, that's strange. I wonder what the Navajo are doing there with making this perfectly straight road. And then I also saw some what looked like parallel lines going off of this rectangle. And what could these be, really? Are there irrigation? It just got me going, kind of curious. What's out there, anyway, in this place that's very remote, very beautiful, and also it's located very close to probably the most sacred spot in all of Hopi and Zuni land, which is the Sipapu or Sipapuni, Sipapunima. You could call it a lot of different things. That's a place of emergence where the Hopi and the Zuni came up out of the earth from the previous world, the third world, and populated the fourth world. They climbed up out of this structure. Now, this is an actual geological structure that you can see on Google Earth. It's located on the north bank of the Little Colorado. It's about 3.5 miles from the juncture of the two rivers upstream on the Little Colorado. And it's basically a travertine dome. It's about 75 feet across, a perfect dome-shaped structure made out of basically mineral water that's developed this dome shape. And in the center of this is a hole that goes down into this dome. And the people came up from the third world into the fourth world through this hole.
Again, legends of people living in the inner earth. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, the episode in question that we're talking about, the Paracast, was broadcast on June 10th and featured J.C. Johnson and Chris telling about this. We've got so much more to talk about with Gary David, with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code Night Owl. Use the coupon code Night Owl to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's L-E-M-K-E Soft.com. LemkeSoft.com. L-E-M-K-E Soft.com.
If you owe the IRS back taxes, listen carefully. Sweeping changes to IRS policies will help more people than ever eliminate their tax debts once and for all. And now, I can help you reduce or eliminate your tax debts and end your tax nightmare. Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I've helped thousands of people reduce and eliminate tax debts they couldn't pay. And after more than 30 years of experience dealing with the IRS, I can tell you there's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. And with the IRS's new policies, it's easier than ever to put your tax debt behind you once and for all. Call now at 800-346-6829 to learn how I can help you. You know your IRS debt will not go away by itself, but you don't have to live in fear anymore. Call 800-346-6829. Learn how I can help you eliminate wage and bank levies, release tax liens, and negotiate a settlement with the IRS that will put your tax nightmare behind you forever. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to taxhelponline.com. That's taxhelponline.com.
When natural disasters strike and the water supply is shut off, you won't panic because you have a CWR emergency water filter. CWR Environmental has been supplying emergency water filters worldwide for over 25 years. The difference? CWR emergency water filters are portable, easy to set up, and exceptional at removing bacteria, parasites, sediment, and many harmful contaminants, including chlorine and harmful microorganisms. Plus, they are NSF certified to assure performance. CWR emergency water filters can produce thousands of gallons of safe drinking water from any water source and come with a 5-year warranty and money-back guarantee. For a limited time, the filters are specially priced with free shipping. Call now. 800-444-3563. That's 800-444-3563. Or go to CWRSurvival.com. That's CWRSurvival.com. CWR Emergency Water Filters. Drinking water you can trust for when you need it most. CWRSurvival.com.
Oh, my aching back. I've got to get some relief for my arthritis.
When arthritis pain rears its ugly head, rub on Smooth Gator, the 60-second pain relief. Smooth Gator provides topical relief from head to toe and everywhere in between to stop pain fast. Smooth Gator is made with all natural oils, including wintergreen, aloe vera, and eucalyptus in a safe, non-greasy formula. Rub Smooth Gator on your neck, back, legs, knees, hands, any muscle or joint where pain from arthritis, sprains, strains, or backache needs fast 60-second pain relief. Smooth Gator can also be used for allergies, sinuses, fibromyalgia, and rheumatoid arthritis. In the time it took to listen to this message, you could have had relief with Smooth Gator, the 60-second pain relief. Go to smoothgator.com or phone 727-278-3137. Call 727-278-3137 or click smoothgator.com, the 60-second pain relief.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
So we're going back to that incredible discovery at the confluence of the Little Colorado and Colorado rivers at the rim of Grand Canyon, all this fascinating stuff with Gary David and Gene and Chris on the Paracast. Now, the thing that just hits me every time I hear things like this is coming from inside the Earth. Does that relate to all the theories about people or beings living inside the Earth in caverns?
Well, sure. That is part of the Hopi mythology. The ant people. There's been a lot of discussion about the ant people lately in different places. The ant people is part of the Hopi. Really, it helped them survive. They wouldn't be around without the ant people. The ant people helped the Hopi survive two different cataclysms: the destruction of the first world by fire, and the destruction of the second world by ice. Fire might be an asteroid strike or a comet or a volcanism of some sort. The second world was destroyed. And when I talk about worlds, they're world ages, really, these cycles of time. The second world was destroyed by ice, a great ice age.
When I hear world, I also think civilization. Is it that the developed civilization of the time was impacted?
Well, that's the whole thing. Yeah, it encompasses the whole world. Because the third world, for instance, was destroyed by a great flood. We have a lot of flood myths in many cultures all over the world. But the Hopi believe that the third world was destroyed by a flood. However, during the destruction of the first two worlds, these ant people took the Hopi down into caverns, into caves in the Grand Canyon area.
When you say ant people, are you talking about insectoid-like people or just the name of a particular race of humanoids?
Well, they were, from what I've seen, I've seen petroglyphs of some of these ant people. And they have, very spindly arms and legs, and they have antenna. And they sort of look like ants. You know, if you look at these things objectively, They look like carvings of ants that, that the Hopi have made. But they're humanoid, too. So they're what anthropologists call therianthropes. They're half human and half animal or insect in this case.
More insect-like than the so-called gray aliens that we talk about today.
Yeah, I would say so, you know, but there are...
there's some pretty startling parallels, though.
There are parallels. And
that's what I'm wondering when I hear this. I'm thinking, wait a minute, we're talking about creatures like that now, and we wonder, the descriptions, could they be exaggerated to emphasize the insect-like tendencies, or is it 100% photographic representation done in drawings?
Well, I think they're pretty specific about them being humanoid ants and not just kind of a fable that you'd read about, you know, the ants helping people or something like that. I think that they were actual creatures, and the Hopi are not. It's not a foreign concept to have all these bizarre creatures. If you look at some of the Kachinas, they look pretty bizarre with the feathers and the helmets that sometimes look like space helmets, and the different sorts of masks. All these spirit creatures that were once, according to the Hopi, they were once physical creatures that walked among them.
And that's an interesting possibility here. Is there any reason to think that it's not that they are necessarily insect-like, but they're wearing space helmets, with the antenna being some kind of communications means or mechanism?
Well, that's possible. It's possible that they're just, you know, nuts and bolts extraterrestrials and coming in nuts and bolts crafts down to Earth. I tend to think that they're probably more interdimensional creatures coming through some kind of wormhole to this dimension and interacting with the people in a physical form. You know,
they could be underground dwelling crypto-terrestrials for that matter.
They could still be down there, you know. Like I said, the Hopi were saved by these people, so they're benevolent. They don't have the malicious intent that some grays seem to exhibit toward people, but they helped the Hopi survive, and they taught them how to sprout beans in these caverns. The Hopi have the bean dance, the Powamu, every February to commemorate this time when the ant people took them down in the caverns and showed them how to sprout these beans in a dark place.
Do we look at the ant people, whatever they might be, as something in the past, or is it possible that these ant people are something that is up front and center today, something that's a present-day phenomenon or creature that one could find if they looked for them?
Well, of course, there are ancient legends about these ant people, but I think they could still be living under the earth right now. And it's in these caverns because this whole area around the confluence is honeycombed with caves and caverns. So who knows what might be under there? Of course, we can get into the Lost City of the Dead in Grand Canyon, if you want to, as well.
Happily.
Yeah, let's talk about that because of the correlation just in terms of the location.
Sure.
Of this fabled underground city of the Hopi, and then just around the corner, basically, as a crow flies, not even 7, 8, 10 miles, is this 1909 Egyptian City of the Dead that allegedly was discovered by a prospector. Why don't you give us a thumbnail sketch of Kincaid and the whole Egyptian city.
Yeah, I have a chapter in my new book, Star Shrines and Earthworks of the Desert Southwest, about this kind of amazing story. And I get asked more questions about this than probably any other topic about the Southwest. Apparently on April 5th, 1909, well, not apparently, actually, this story appeared in the Arizona Gazette. It was the daily newspaper published in Phoenix. And it was a front page article. It was 2,200 words long. And it talked about a man named G.E. Kincaid, supposedly from Idaho. And he was working for the Smithsonian Institution. Not that he was directly employed, but it suggests that he was working kind of like a contract, a worker for the Smithsonian. And he left Green River, Wyoming, in the fall of 1908, in October, and he sailed down the Colorado River in a wooden boat, and he was taking photographs, apparently, And he was making notes and so forth. And this article appeared on April 5th that he had discovered a major archaeological find in the Grand Canyon. It's specifically an area north of the Little Colorado River in an area technically called Marble Canyon. And he spotted a cave entrance. It was about 1,500 feet from the rim and more than 2,000 feet above the river. And this entrance was about 12 feet wide. And he managed to climb up to this cave. And it said he climbed up with great difficulty to this cave. And that's probably an understatement. He really had to, you know, it was really a climbing feat.
He risked life and limb having viewed that area. It's almost inconceivable that someone would have the cojones to do it.
Oh, yeah. And, but he apparently made it. He made it up to this entrance of the cave. And the tunnel went into the side of the cliff, and it went horizontally into the side of the cliff. And it went about 60 feet in this tunnel, and the tunnel looked like it had been not just a natural cave, but it looked like it had been carved or, you know, etched out of this rock into a kind of a square-shaped tunnel. And there were two side passageways that branched off, and there were a number of rooms in these side passageways, and they had oval-shaped doors in these rooms, and there were ventilation shafts. And then further on, he went down the main tunnel, and it came to a chamber, a huge chamber.
We'll get into more of this lost city on our next segment with Gary David, with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com.
Preparedness is simple when you have the right stuff. And with the looming threat of economic collapse and possible service interruption, it's time to get the best-in-class preparedness stuff at DisasterStuff.com. DisasterStuff.com has been serving smart preppers for over 15 years with quality products like Berkey water filters. DisasterStuff.com is the official Berkey in-stock shipping center. And as always, free shipping on all Berkey products. Stock up on water barrels and accessories. Get Country Living or Wonder Mill grain mills, Excalibur food dehydrators, Tatler reusable canning lids, Sun Oven solar cookers, EMP bags to protect sensitive electronics, and don't be without your Life Straw personal water filter, all from DisasterStuff.com. Preparedness is simple with the right stuff from DisasterStuff.com. Freedom through self-reliance and personal responsibility.
Attention, this is an announcement for our listeners who drive gasoline vehicles. Federal Consumer Protection has confirmed that there is now an automotive accessory that exceeds its own fuel-saving claims. Consumer Protection has confirmed that most gasoline vehicles will get 22% more miles per gallon with an accessory called Platinum 22. To find out if Platinum 22 will give your vehicle 22% more miles per gallon, you should call 1-800-LESS-GAS. You heard me correctly. 1-800-LESS-GAS. You heard me. Federal Consumer Protection has confirmed that the Platinum 22 accessory will deliver 22% more miles per gallon to most gasoline vehicles. You should pick up the phone and call 1-800-LESS-GAS to find out if it will help your vehicle. That's 1-800-LESS-GAS. 1-800-LESS-GAS. 22% more miles per gallon. 1-800-LESS-GAS.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity products. Aaron Dykes lost 92 pounds. We're going to show you some before and afters. Aaron, break down what happened, your story.
I've worked really hard with diet and exercise to try to lose weight, but I just didn't get the results. It just didn't happen. Then I saw what you were doing with InfoWarsTeam.com. I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I got it because I wanted to feel better energy. I wanted that nutrition. Didn't even understand how that could kickstart my own weight loss goals, but the products did that for me. I found myself suddenly losing weight, more energetic, wanting to exercise, wanting to eat the right foods.
And they don't even advertise it as weight loss. I want to challenge our radio listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com. Sign up as a distributor and get wholesale pricing discounts at InfoWarsTeam.com.
Hello, this is Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Exploring a possible lost city near the Grand Canyon, and you wonder how many more of these are present but unaccounted for. Gary, proceed.
Sure. He went down this main chamber, and he went into the chamber, and there were a number of other tunnels that came off like spokes on a wheel, he called it. So this was a huge complex. The article stated, it actually stated that it could hold up to 50,000 people. Which seems incredible. Maybe that's just a journalistic exaggeration.
Could a place like this have been built to house people because of the belief the world was about to end, at least on the surface, and so we want to get people into one of these hidden cities to preserve humankind?
Well, it's hard to say because this was, you know, he found this in 1909, and the idea of the whole world ending wasn't real prevalent. I mean, there were a few...
Well, there have always been rumors the world's going to end. I mean, you go back every 10, 20 years or something, there's another set of rumors that something's going to happen, a great worldwide cataclysm. Certainly all the paranoia during the 1950s about nuclear weapons was one reason, but even when we had Y2K, it was thought, well, Y2K, now the world's going to end because the bit doesn't turn over to the year 2000.
Well, I think this would have been massive overkill as far as that goes, because, you know, this was such a massive complex, and they also found really anomalous artifacts inside this cave complex. They found copper and gold cups. They found copper weapons. They found slag and charcoal, which means they were smelting, some kind of a metal smelting that was done there. They found enameled pottery. Kincaid found these stone tablets with some sort of hieroglyphic writing on them. There was a dining hall that measured something like 40 by 700 feet. It was just an amazing complex. And also, this one of the most amazing finds in this was a statue, a carved marble statue of a Buddha sitting in a lotus posture. Holding a lotus in each hand. Now, this is, you know, a Buddha in the Grand Canyon. Well, okay. Completely adverse to any paradigm that archaeologists were functioning at the time. You know, you don't find statue of Buddha in the Grand Canyon. You don't find any Egyptian artifacts either. They found a number of mummies lying on carved rock shelves, and there were like broken swords lying by them, and cups and different artifacts, but they're, you know, Egyptian mummies, Egyptian style mummies, and a Buddha in this particular cave.
Isn't this part and parcel of some of the anomalies we've long discovered, where we think, okay, this race of people, they live in this particular part of the world, and then we travel somewhere else, and there's a relic or some reminder that they may have traveled far more distances than we expected?
Well, this gets into the whole idea of the mainstream paradigm of the isolationists, who the academic people who say that there was no pre-Columbian exchange of ideas or people or trade to the New World. And the Native Americans were just isolated on this continent, and there was no, except they sometimes give the Vikings a little nod there. There was no interface between, you know, ancient cultures and the New World. But the diffusionists have a different view, that there was trade all over the world in ancient times, global maritime trading that went to the New World, and possibly, you know, as far as this cave, if it's valid, to Arizona.
Okay, so they use ships around the world. Nobody's saying they had flying machines or anything like that.
You know, I think flying machines are a part of the third world, according to the Hopi. The Hopi have this myth of flying shields that existed in the third world. And this is much like the Hindu Vimanas that the Vedic texts talk about. So, you know, the Hopi and the Hindus are aligned in that sense, that in the previous world age, there were these flying machines. But I think in this age, people are, you know, diffusionists are saying, well, you know, there was a lot of ship travel between continents before Columbus.
It's a lot easier to say that than talking about advanced aircraft or anything else, although can we think here that some of this may have been accomplished through some advanced technology that we had, or we got from other people, star people, whatever?
Well, you know, you can go in all different directions, I believe. You know, the Hopi and the Zuni also acknowledge star ancestors or star people and coming down. The Hopi have legends of star people coming down, star Kachinas coming down and mating with Hopi women. And, you know, this is a pretty common thing in Hopi myths, Hopi legends. So, you know, there might be some kind of extraterrestrial influence on the Hopi people and on the Zuni people.
Of course, there are also those legends of ancient cataclysms that we had in advanced civilization, that something happened and maybe people went into the caves to escape from that. Others may have left this planet. Who knows? But that goes back to even the legends of Richard Shaver and the Deros and the Tiros. That's the classic legend.
Well, the Hopi definitely went down into these caverns. They have ceremonies right now, you know, the ant people saving them. So, you know, I think they were in jeopardy as a people, and they had to go into the earth in order to survive. And their whole cosmology is based on this subterranean existence. The Hopi believe that when they die, they go back down into the Grand Canyon through the Sipapuni, and they'll meet a god named Masau. Now, Masau is a rather interesting Hopi god. Masau is very striking in his appearance. He was one of the major gods that the Hopi confronted when they came up out of the Grand Canyon. He's very tall. He has large round eyes. He has a round mouth. He has a bulbous head, very large bulbous head that's has a texture of a summer squash, so it's rather bumpy. He has very long arms and feet, and his skin is gray. Okay.
Oh boy, gray again.
So this looks a lot like the tall grays that we're used to seeing. He's probably a tall gray. rather than one of the shorter grays. But, you know, his name, Massau, that the word M-A-S is actually means gray in the Hopi language. So, and he's the god of death, the god of the underworld, the god of fire. And people believe that when they die, they all go back down into the earth and have to confront Massau in sort of a judgment, you know, process. Much like the Egyptian scenario of the underworld or the Duat, where you're judged, your deeds on earth are judged by Osiris. So Osiris and Massau have a lot in common as far as the god of death and resurrection.
Well, something else that has a lot in common is the actual Sipapu location and its proximity to the alleged underground city that G.E. Kincaid found in 1909. Because if you go just down Marble Canyon, a couple, 3 miles to the confluence, and then go up the confluence, the Little Colorado, a couple, 3 miles, that's where the place of emergence is plainly visible. So yeah. I find it very interesting that we should have such a close, proximity correlation there. And it's the area between these two locations on top of the rim that you found evidence of this mile by three-quarter mile, you know, perfect rectangle that appeared to have other parallel lines running from it. And, you know, getting back to the original story of our trip, that this is what alerted you that there may be something worthy of investigation there, and you contacted me and David Hatcher Childress, and I'll let you pick it up from there.
But before we do that, we're going to have to break for a moment, then we're going to want to learn more about that, and whether, I'm curious, have there been any new developments since that trip was taken? We have Gary David joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it led back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy at 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Lunch is ready!
And it's an MRE smorgasbord at longlifefood.com. In 1983, Long Life Food Depot was one of the first to sell MRE pouches to the public, and we're still selling them almost 30 years later. Today, Long Life Food Depot has the world's most complete MRE online buffet, because MREs are all we do. Tasty varieties of chicken, beef, salmon, and pasta entrees, plus sandwiches and our easy-to-use pouches. Full moisture, long shelf life, and ready to eat hot or cold. We sell by the pouch or case, so the choices are endless, and so are the graduated quantity discounts. The more you buy, the more you save. Call 800-601-2833 or go to longlifefood.com to join our email list for upcoming announcements like the Rollaway Food Pod. Plus, enjoy fast and free shipping. Just call 800-601-2833 or visit longlifefood.com. Emergency preparedness, emergency relief. Longlifefood.com since 1983, sending real food to your real future.